Johnson will testify from the Department of Revenue, and I think has some examples of some of the problems perhaps that we will run into in that area. Senator Hanlon?
Chairman, the question I'd like to raise here this early in the discussion, and it has to do with this third type of liens that might cause the sale of a house. And I'd like to see the committee explore a little what the effect might be of limiting the opportunities for selling an owner-occupied residence for consumer obligations. Now, we went to a great deal of trouble to identify owner-occupied residences, and I'm wondering what the effects would be if we said that an owner-occupied residence could not be foreclosed upon, could not be sold for obligations that are not directly related to that property, thus eliminating the auto repairman, the TV salesman, having a house sold for dues at the local health spa or whatever.
Okay, now, as I understand it, can they foreclose on the house under the security lien area for a bill, such as he pointed out, the mechanic who had done a repair job?
I don't know too much about that. I believe legal aid testified on this area. I believe that they're, I believe they can.
Yeah, almost anything, isn't that right? What the net effects of that would be, with the idea of protecting a man's home who is his castle, or if Ruth was here, I'd have to say the man or woman, his or her castle.
Mr. Chairman,
hideout.
Or whatever.
Whatever.
I like that idea, and I think that has considerable merit. I'd support it. I'd like to see those amendments drafted.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, this is the type of question that I don't believe the tax collectors feels that we would like to, because it doesn't really impact us. I'm not running from you, but I just
that wasn't a question directed at you. We're just going to look at that as possible.
Thank you for listening, and if we can be of any further help or provide any further information,
thank you.
Glad.
Very clear understanding of all three. Mr. Eldon Johnson with the Department of Revenue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eldon Johnson, Department of Revenue. And I think on the minimum bid, I think they should be based on the current appraisal. The problems you get into on foreclosure, you could have a piece of land with a house on it, improvement. It could be destroyed, burned down, and the value left after the property is destroyed is a lot less than the assessment on the roll.
Okay, so you would think it would need a private appraisal at each time a piece of property was put up for sale?
Yes, I do.
And the example you're giving us is that something might be on the rolls for $40,000, but the improvements on it may burn down in the meantime,
right,
and you'd be forced to sell that at 75% of that.
And they couldn't realize that 75% of the assessed value.
Okay, who should do that new appraisal? Should it be the assessor or a private?
No, I think the assessor would be a good source to do that appraisal.
Chairman, it seemed to me that the type of situation that the witness described is not something that occurs every day. I wonder if we could merely provide that in the event that the value on record is considered to be substantially in error as a result of some unusual event, then and only then do we go to the private appraisal.
Yeah, well, I think the suggestion here was that the county assessor would be responsible as opposed to a private appraisal, maybe, of coming out and taking a new look at it and giving a current appraisal of the situation.
Okay.
And they may object to that because of the cost involved, but that would be one possibility without going to a private appraisal.
Well, I'm just thinking if there's no contest at the price of on record, why then you have this other mechanism for the reappraisal to take care of it.
Okay, Elvin, did you have other things about the bills or our discussion?
this, I, in contact with the county tax collectors on foreclosures and various things, county assessors.
The problems that that we're trying to address, are they primarily caused to the security lien problem, or do you see a mixture of them through tax foreclosures as well?
No, I see the security lien problem holder is altogether different problem from the tax foreclosure problem.
Even though
on the real property foreclosure.
Even though the result might be the same, and that is the real property may be sold to satisfy the lien.
On the real property foreclosure at the present time under Chapter 312, there are a lot of provisions for giving notice to the owner. So I believe in that chapter there is sufficient notice at the present time to the owner.
Okay. Does that include a posting of their property that might be sold, physical posting?
Usually the county tax collector, in addition to the notices of delinquency, they have to give a notice of delinquency each year, August 15th. Then they would give notice that the property is being subject to foreclosure. And most tax collectors try to get in contact by telephone and other means, in addition to the required notices, to give sufficient notice to the foreclosed property holder.
Okay, well, we'll look at that chapter to see what notice provisions there are there. Other questions, Mr. Young? Thank you very much. Mr. Noel Klein, League of Oregon Cities. Here to shoot Kerman Carson. No gun.
Mr. Chairman, Noel Klein with the League of Oregon Cities. I guess, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to take a short space of your time to, again ask that in reviewing the three bills, and in particular Senate Bill 759, that we distinguish very clearly between the three sets of statutes that we're talking about here. We are most interested, of course, in Chapter 223. Note that the Senate Bill 759, for instance, in some of the amendments, the new language is proposed there, speak in terms of a procedure that might be valid under Chapter 23, but really has no, doesn't make any sense when just lumped straight into ORS Chapter 223. For instance, line 14 talks about a copy of the writ of execution. There's really no such thing in a procedure under ORS 223 or under that whole city lien procedure. Our request would be, I think, just to look at the three situations as they are and work through your intent individually. The checking around that I've done with cities is that it's very, very rare that foreclosure occurs on a homestead, an owner-occupied homestead, or any kind of cities are almost fastidious in the notice requirements in just tracking down to the almost last possible effort before any foreclosure has taken place on a homestead. And certainly Senator Hanlon's suggestion with regard to a differentiation between homesteads and other real property is one that we would like to take a closer look at. If you recall, Senator Powell, I think in 1977 we worked on the existing language in 223. I think the feeling at that time, we went through putting a maximum amount in there, and the language that was inserted at that time provided that a minimum amount would be paid up front, and that that would more easily facilitate the owner buying back into the property within a period of a year. I think those amendments at that time were made in response to a case involving the city of Portland. We would certainly be willing to take a look at the insertion of a value figure in there, realizing that and wanting to look closely, I think, at whether that makes it more difficult for the original owner to get back in and buy the property.
Okay. Now, are you familiar with both 660 and 759, the bills? 660 only addresses Chapter 23. The 759 addresses 23 and 223, but does not address 311 or 312. In fact, none of the bills address the property tax foreclosure. So in the legislation that affects the city, the 223, we're talking about the notice provisions. Are you saying that perhaps those provisions would undo some protection that we put into the law in 1977?
I'm saying in 759, 223 is a procedure we would use for city liens.
Yes.
Some of the language that you're taking from 23 and putting into 223, particularly on the first page there, where I mentioned talking about a copy of a writ of execution, just doesn't have any application to the city lien procedure. There is no writ of execution, for instance, under the city lien procedure. It's an administrative process. There's no court judgment or anything.
Okay.
So it would just be, you know, if your intent is to provide additional notice, I think that can be worked out, but not with the language that you've lifted from 23 here.
Did you have anything else?
No, I think we'd be perfectly willing to look at changes to 223. Our concern, the greatest advantage of the foreclosure provisions is not the eventual foreclosure, but the threat of foreclosure is often sufficient enough to have the lien paid. As I say, looking at a homestead, if you want to look at some exemptions for that, I don't believe that that's going to cause too much trouble. The majority of cities that have exercised foreclosure have done so on primarily vacant land, where they have perhaps gone in and assisted in development, and they're ultimately left with a piece of property that they have to foreclose on. They're the primary targets for foreclosure. With a 75% payment for a piece of property that you really don't get title to for a year, that is probably going to have some. It's going to make buying foreclosed property less attractive, and maybe that's one of the purposes we're after.
You got it.
Okay. Are there other questions? You can work with us then. And
certainly.
Who would we ask as to the number of foreclosures in a given year? Who could give us some estimate? What are we talking about? Is there anybody that would have a pretty good guess?
Which type of
in any type?
Any
all
of the three.
Is this a real? Is this being used in collection proceedings to a large extent, to a moderately large extent, insignificant?
about 40 actually going on the foreclosure sale, and of those, well, this year our actual sale list, now this is foreclosure, and then you're subject to a one-year right of redemption. This year our actual sale list will be between 17 and 20 properties.
Okay. Of the 300, Bill, how many were homes, residents?
I have absolutely no
would
idea.
Would it be a high percentage of those? Okay. Would you? But you have no idea.
Like three or four that were actually.
Yeah, only three or four out of the 40.
The rest of them were land only houses.
Okay. But I'm talking about the 300, because if it's 300 and 200 of those are homes, and we do away with the foreclosure proceeding as it results to homes, there's going to be a lot of delinquencies that are never paid. And I don't think it's the committee's intent to create a new breed of exemption from paying your bills. We'll need that
information. I don't want to get into the city foreclosures or the tax foreclosures or even any foreclosures that's related to the home. I'm just asking the question, what would be the result if we said no sale of homes for unrelated personal
that's why
on owner-occupied residence.
See, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hanlon, that's why I think that we might get legislative research to do something on some sample counties and cities to get an idea on this. The thing I suggest to you is that if people use that as a line of credit, what we may be doing is drying up people's opportunity for a line of credit, and that might worry me, because they might want to use that for a line of credit for other reasons, and I just don't know what that effect is, like you don't, but I think we ought to examine that side of the question, too, because there are some people, not everybody's a deadbeat. You follow what I'm saying? And they may want to use their home as a line of credit to accomplish something along that line. And I could think of a farmer or somebody who might use that as a line of credit for machinery for a temporary reason. I don't know. But that's the kind of questions I think we've got to
ask. My suggestion was, let's explore.
Possible
results.
We can, our staff, I think, can get that information.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Gary Roberts, Multnomah County Legal Aid. I know that information is available from Mr. Woods in the Multnomah County civil process. When we introduced a bill dealing with, which we called last session, and there's similar legislation pending in two bills this year, we did a survey in Multnomah County alone of the type for judgments under $3,000 unrelated to property, because our bill just talked about stopping sales for small judgments. For $10,000 judgments, we think maybe the equities are slightly different. For small judgments, from November 78 to January 79, a three-month period in Multnomah County alone, there were 10 foreclosure sales. Now, I have no way of knowing whether or not that is typical. Well, no, they are residents.
Okay.
These are houses. I don't know whether that three-month period of time is typical or not, because we just did it. There are a lot of judgments to go through.
Yes.
Records weren't very complete then. But that's at least a ballpark figure. My impression is that it's continuing at that rate, but I have no direct evidence.
Mr. Chairman, you said those are residents. Were they owner-occupied residents?
Yes. We were in contact with each of the 10 people to verify the rest of their questions.
10 people in 3 months?
In 3 months period of time in Multnomah County only.
I just can't say 40 a year in one county.
Yes. And these are just small judgments. These aren't the, although there are far more small judgments than there are the larger.
Okay. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify on the bills, two bills?
I'm Jerry Johnson. I'm captain to run the Civil Division of Clackamas County.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you did.
I'm a captain in the Sheriff's Office.
Oh, okay.
I have the Civil Division.
Sorry, I didn't understand
County.
That. You said you were a captain and I'm
right.
In Clackamas County. And I want to know what up.
He does have a gun.
He does have
no,
a gun.
I don't.
Oh, okay.
Not in this building, but.
Please.
Okay. I have some problems with all three of the bills. One is I've conducted the tax foreclosure sales in Clackamas County for 20 years. I sold one that has a residence on it. It was the one that was on television 4 or 5 years ago. That's the only one that taxed land. And our normal foreclosure sale on tax property is after the redemption period has elapsed. The county commissioner set a minimum bid on
have standards, or they just do that on each individual piece?
On each individual piece. We have a person that's assigned as a land agent property officer, and we handle and sell the tax foreclosed property the same as we do county surplus land. There are two different sales that are two different statutes, but the methods are the same.
Have you ever had the problem of people being involved in that process, actually bidding on the properties involved?
You mean?
People involved in selling the property, bidding on the property?
No, like, because it's sold by the sheriff, and it's illegal for the sheriff to have an interest or be a purchaser.
How about the commissioners? Or?
No, I've never had any. I've never had any problem with that. Sometimes the minimum, if the minimum bid is set at $8,000, and you don't get this minimum bid of $8,000, if somebody bids $7,600, the commissioners then, after the sale, can never sell it for less than $7,600.
Anyone ever come to you and ask you to be tout them on sales that are coming up?
Yes.
Yeah. Does it happen frequently?
I don't know exactly what you mean, but I'm approached all the time. You mean as a list of the county property and so on? Yes, we maintain a mailing list, and they're added to a list, and every time that one comes up, one is mailed to them, the notice of sale.
You prior to that list being published, give an advance notice of this?
No, but they don't understand, because all we do is put their name on a list, and when the list comes out, it's mailed to them.
All right, that's the approach you're talking about. What you're saying is, if they want to be notified, you have a method, they'll notify anyone that comes in.
Right, anyone.
You were kind of walking in a narrow trap, and I wanted to get you back out, but okay. Trying to say is you have a notice system. If someone comes in and asks you for that, you'll put them like any other
person. They go on the mailing list.
Elby, you weren't trying to get him out. He got himself out.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, if you were to want to be put on a list, I'll put your name on a list. Next time the notice is published, the notice will come to you.
I was really asking you if people had tried to enter in collusion with someone of your staff, those type of sales.
Yeah, but I think the people that asked me about it weren't aware that it was against the law, and I made that pretty clear. I own no real property.
Oh, we weren't.
And I have an interest.
Let's
in
start over. I have a reason.
I know what
you're totally about. Honest. I just was asking you. You handle this type of thing. I want to know the type of circumstances you run into. What you're.
Oh, I've been asked,
happens.
And I've been asked, and somebody says, "Well, do this or do that." I just tell them it's illegal and let it go at that.
And don't put any of us on your list either.
Mr. Chairman, let the record show that Senator Day is not interested in getting any inside information so that he can buy homes this way.
I don't know how the hell I could. My wife has me mortgaged the hell now. You're safe on that one.
Okay. I have some other problems with 660. One is, under this notice provision and so on, if this were enacted the way it is, one is we're sending an additional notice on some real property sales now, and I'm talking about a sheriff's sale where the county's not involved in it. It's either a mortgage foreclosure or it's for a money judgment where somebody owes money and they're trying to collect it. If right now when these sales are done, they have been served a summons, they've had an opportunity for a day in court, when we get the execution for the time of the sheriff's sale, we're sending now somewhere between 50 to 75 sheets of paper to these people. It's a couple, sometimes 100 sheets. They get it by regular mail, by registered mail. And I'm not
sure. How many times do you send them those sheets?
We send them the notice once, and that's prior to the sale.
And what kind of mail do you use?
We use registered mail, and we mail one by regular first-class mail, which the mailman will leave in their mailbox.
And you get a return receipt?
Return receipt on the registered mail. Very rarely did they sign for it. We were sending the one by first-class mail long before it was passed in the last legislature.
But you at least have a receipt from the registered mail showing the attempt.
Right, that it was mailed. And some of the problems, and we see, we've been sending for the last 4 years with legislature, we say on a mortgage foreclosure, we send them all the stuff for their homestead exemption and so on, which they're not entitled to. You know, and so they're getting all of these pieces of paper, even on a mortgage foreclosure, when they're not entitled to an exemption. And so, what my contention intention is. I'm not against it. I'm not sure that the notice system that we have now is proper. I think adding this to it is not going to do any more than what we're doing. I think we need to do one of two things. Prior to the sale, go out and post a notice on the front door that says this property is for sale by the sheriff or the county, or stick a sign in the front yard.
We have that in 759.
Okay. But the other problem that happens is if it's a vacant piece of land you're foreclosing on, it's a business, then there's no provision to sell this type of property because you can't comply with the statute. There's no exclusion for vacant land. If we can't post it on the front door, we can't.
Okay, because you're saying it's too specific.
It's too specific.
That we should just say that it be.
Or it should say in case of an abode or something like this to separate it, so you only have to do it in the case of a dwelling house.
Vacant land, you could post on vacant land too. Nothing would stop you as long as we indicate that if we redo this in such a way that you either post on the abode or in a conspicuous place on the property, it'll take care of it.
And then when we do the posting, there should be no need to turn right around and mail again, because we're going to immediately mail after the posting is done. The notice of sale. We're making an extra mailing there. One of the amendments, I think, says that we send it back to the clerk that issued the execution. If the defendant happened to live out of the county and the clerk was in the execution issued by another county, we'd have to first send it to the other county, and if they posted, then we had to send it back to the clerk of the issuing county on the writ of execution, and they'd have to mail it and then send us back. By the time this was done, the execution would expire. And then the other issue that I have with Senate Bill 759 is where you have to have 3/4 of the value of the property for the bid before it's to be sold. One is that should clarify whether the sheriff has to obtain this or who furnishes to him this assessed thing.
Him or her
or whatever.
Yeah.
I have a
more
her
trouble that, with her and you
yeah,
are me on that.
I have a her that conducts all the sheriff's sales anyway.
You should have been including it all the time, then I should have to remind you.
If you have a piece of property that's worth $125,000, the defendant owes $60,000 on it, you have a second mortgage for $10,000, you want to foreclose, you can't because you're only bidding on the $60,000 balance. Therefore, you can't foreclose your second mortgage with a 75% bid, nor can you collect the debt. You have two types of sheriff sales. One is it's in REM, where you're selling the property, where it's a mortgage, where it's a security agreement. The other type is in personam. That's a money judgment where you're going after the person's equity or so on. When you don't have a security agreement, and you're selling a personam, the only thing that's offered for sale is the defendant's interest
equity.
Or equity. And there's not many equities that's up for sheriff's
sale.
So
whoever gets the equity then is responsible to pay the mortgage holder?
Right. But he's not responsible to pay at the time of the sale or then. And so it could be a $50,000 equity there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this bill just excludes foreclosing second mortgages and collecting any other type of bills.
You actually sell the
equity. In other words, if you have a judgment against Senator Day, his house.
I do have collected.
His house is worth His house is worth $100,000, and you have a judgment for $25,000, and you have it put it up for sale. When you're buying his equity, you can't pay $75,000 for it, which is 75% of the assessed valuation.
Any other points on the two bills?
That's all I have.
Would you, what I want to do here is create a subcommittee on this. Would you work with us? If we give you enough notice,
yes.
Post it on your door.
We right.
In your front yard. In your front yard.
Or on the sign. In your front yard.
Okay.
Either way, as long as I have notice.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Is that it? People who wanted to testify today? Okay, who would like to serve on the subcommittee? Senator Hanlon, would you like to, depending on your schedule, none of us have time, it's just a matter of which ones are going
to
make time.
Well, I know that, I'll be glad
okay.
to hear. Who else would like to, Senator Monroe?
I think it'll be you.
I just have a subcommittee on land use outside the door today, but I'll do it. Yes, I'll do it.
Do you want to be on it?
Sure. If I can meet the schedule, I'm on five committees.
Well, tell me.
Five.
Poor baby.
We'll send you the chaplain from the Senate.
Okay, I'll do it. And so it'll be Senator Hanlon, Day, and Powell. We'll work with people from assessors, Department of Revenue, Legal Aid, and Sheriff, everybody who wants to be involved. And we'll simply post notice as a regular committee would be.